My name is Kurt Mortensen. I've been studying persuasion for the last 15 years. I teach it at a collegiate level. I've read over 100 books, 1,000 studies, and I apply it every day. Thousands of hours of applications, and I call these the laws of persuasion, magnetic persuasion, or the call to action. Now, just like the law of gravity, it always works. And if you apply these in the right way, the laws of persuasion, you'll be able to create a call to action, a sense of urgency so incredible that people will beg you for your product. And I also call them the weapons of influence. They are weapons, and I pray that as I teach you these things today that you'll use them for good. They are weapons. You can use them for good or evil because they work. And so I encourage you to take some great notes today, and I'll show you exactly how it works because it is the art and science of instant influence. I'm going to talk about the science today, exactly how it works, and the art is up to you, how you apply it, how you mold it to your life, to your marketing, to your writing, and to your research. And what we want you to do is get your customers to beg for your product. And, of course, win customers for life, because that's what it's all about. Now, there's a direct relationship. There's a one-on-one correlation between your ability to persuade and your income. And so we want to spend some time showing you exactly how that works, because less than 1% of the people in this world even know these techniques. Your average person might know 5, 6, 7 of these techniques, tools. There's over 100. And generally, they'll use 3 or 4 of them on a daily basis. Now, if you look at the keys of the piano of persuasion, okay, most people only know a few notes, and they're playing chopsticks. And what I want to do is give you Mozart, give you all the tools so you can customize them to your group and to your audience. And let me start off with just a fable. The sun and the wind are bitter enemies, and they don't like each other. And they're always competing with each other, saying who's stronger, who's better. And the wind tended to be a little cocky and told the sun that he is the most powerful element in the universe. He is the most powerful. He can destroy cities with hurricanes. He can destroy towns with his wind. And the sun said, well, you know, I'm a valuable part of the universe too. He says, but nobody's more powerful than the wind. And so they decided to have a little contest. And so the wind asked the sun to pick a contest. And so the sun looked down on the earth and he saw an elderly man walking down the street. He says, all right, if you can get that man, if you can blow off that man's jacket, get that man to take off his jacket, you are the most powerful element in the universe. So the wind was kind of cocky and he invited his friends, the rain and the clouds, they all came in. And they blew. The wind blew and blew. And harder the wind blew, the man grabbed his jacket, held on tighter, and resisted, and he resisted, and he resisted. And he tried, and he tried, and he couldn't. He even knocked down the man, but he would not take off his jacket. And the sun kind of smiled and says, now it's my turn. The clouds left. The rain started to evaporate. The sun got brighter, brighter, warmer, and warmer. You could see the small beads of perspiration on the old man's head. The old man just took off his jacket. And that's persuasion. If people know your tactics, if they know what you're doing, they will resist you. They will resist you. And that's why you need to use the true forms of persuasion, where people will want to do what you want them to do and like it. Less than 1% knows these actual techniques. And persuasion is the call to action, and we need to learn to apply these tools. It's a new world out there. Times have changed. Aristotle, who wrote The Art of Rhetoric, talked about ethos, pathos, and logos, but you have a different beast today. Your consumer, your prospect, is better educated, more skeptical, and has access to more information than ever before. Now your consumer, when they hear about your product, they can go online, they can find your competitors, they can find other price points, they can find exactly what you're doing. Car dealerships have the same problem. Before, it didn't matter what they charged for a car. Now people come in with information as far as comparables, manufacturer sticker price, what the car actually cost them. So your consumer is also being bombarded with messages every day. 5,000, according to Advertising Age magazine, 5,000 messages a day are bombarded your prospective clients. Internet, radio, TV, magazines, whatever it is, they're hitting. And what we need to do is have you stand out and what I call magnetize your message. Just like iron filings crumb to a magnet, we want to magnetize your message and create magnetic persuasion. So let me give you a few definitions of how this works. Persuasion is what you do and what you say. This is what we're talking about today, the 12 laws of persuasion. Influence is who you are, okay? Passion, credibility, trust, power. There's 5 forms of power that we won't have time to get to today. Increase your ability to persuade and influence. And motivation, that's what we're looking for today, that call to action, where people actually run and beg for your products. So let's talk about the hierarchy of persuasion, just to give you a foundation on how persuasion works. Because persuasion will make you better parents, better coaches, better managers, and everything we do in life revolves around persuasion. There's different ways to do that. And sometimes the world has a negative perception about persuasion, because some people just do it the wrong way. And I want to show you the different ways to do it. There's the five C's of persuasion. The first is control. Fear, force, and threats. Anybody can put a gun to your head and persuade you to do something. It's the very lowest form of persuasion. People do it because it's easy and it doesn't take much effort, but it causes remorse and it causes resentment. And it's very short term. The next is coercion. Another low form of persuasion, pressure, manipulation, and intimidation. In fact, let me give you an example. Let's say you're a vice president of a large corporation. The president invites you in, says, I want you to get every employee to donate $100 to this new charity. I don't care how you do it, just get it done. I don't want to hear about it again. So you could use control and fear and threats with the employees and say, look, if you don't donate, I can't be responsible for what happens to your house. Okay? That would work, right? But it's very short term. You could use coercion, right? You could come up to them and say, look, your evaluation's coming up in a month. If you don't donate $100, you won't get a good evaluation. You won't get a raise. You won't get a promotion. Okay? Resentment. People don't like that. It doesn't last. And it's very short term. I want to talk about the top three. That includes our 12 laws of persuasion. The first is compliance, offering incentive, rewards, or benefits. You could come to an employee and say, look, I need $100 for this charity. If you donate $100, I'll give you an extra two-week paid vacation next year. Simple, everybody wins. It's utility. Next one is cooperation. Convincing, encouraging, or coaxing, actually selling them on the idea that this is a great charity, it's to your best benefit, you're really going to help out in the community, please donate $100. And the top, which is actually a form of influence, which is long-term, is commitment. In this form, you don't even have to be around for it to work. It comes from respect, honor, and trust. And you come to the employee and say, look, I need you to donate to a charity, and the employee says, how much, and who do I write the check to? Because they know who you are, they know what you represent, and they know that you would not ask them to do something that wasn't worth their while. And that's what we're looking for, at least the top three, compliance, cooperation, and commitment. So let's get into the laws of persuasion, how they work, the automatic triggers, and why these laws work. The reason these laws work is we don't want to spend time and energy to process every decision. We create mental shortcuts, knee-jerk reactions. And our minds get stuck on cruise control. Joseph Sugarman, a master marketer, said 95% of the reasons we buy involve a subconscious decision. It just feels right. We want to do it. And that's the type of triggers we're working for in persuasion to receive that call to action. The first law, and I'm going to go over 12 of them real briefly. Leon Festinger, 1957, Stanford University, came up with the theory of cognitive dissonance. Okay? People feel an internal pressure to act consistent with their beliefs, attitudes, and commitments. Dissonance is a discrepancy between what we think and feel and what we actually do. And as master marketers, you need to create that dissonance, that discrepancy, because this dissonance is awkward, unpleasant, and uncomfortable and creates psychological tension. We can't live with it when we feel this dissonance. In fact, we will do things that we don't want to do to get rid of this dissonance. Okay? Let me show you how that works. Some examples. Marty, in 1975, did a landmark study on a New York City beach. Wanted to test what commitments would do to people when they felt that dissonance, that discrepancy between their thoughts and their thoughts and their actions. He went to a beach, had someone place a towel 5 feet away from somebody else, and put down a radio and walk away. And they had an accomplice, a Confederate, come and steal the radio. And they wanted to see how many people in New York City would go after this thief. And out of 20 people, one person went after the thief, 5%. So they changed it around just a little bit. They went to there and they put down the towel and the radio. They looked the person in the eye and said, could you please watch my things? And people say, well, sure, I'll watch your things. Walks off, here comes the Confederate, the accomplice steals the radio. 19 out of 20 people ran after a thief, did something they didn't want to do because they made that commitment. Very powerful law. Because when you show inconsistency between beliefs, attitudes, and thoughts, it's very powerful. If you're doing a weight loss product and you're showing inconsistency between what they want and what they're doing and what they need, you'll get dissonance. Now, the key with dissonance, when you create that, you need to provide a solution. That would be your product or your service. Buyer's remorse is also a form of cognitive dissonance. And when people feel that, they'll look for around them to find reasons to keep the product or to return the product. And American Cancer Society also did a study where they talked to people. They say, do you support us? If you do, please wear this lapel pin. Pretty simple. And they made that initial commitment and the belief that they believed in the American Red Cross. And they came back later and asked for donations. And they found that the people that were in the lapel pin that made that initial commitment were twice as likely to donate to the cause. So create dissonance. The second law is the law of scarcity. Very important law, because the natural human psyche, our condition, is that we don't like to make decisions. Okay? That's why the call to action is so important. You can have the best product in the world, and you found the best client who wants your product, needs your product, and can afford your product, but they will still resist that final decision to purchase your product. And that's where you use these laws of persuasion, especially the law of scarcity, which states opportunities are always more valuable and exciting when they are scarce and less available. In fact, the threat of potential loss is greater than the thought of gaining something of equal value, meaning we fear losing $100 more than we would appreciate getting $100. And that's what it's all about. Scarcity increases the value of your product. When you threaten somebody's free choice, they want it more. They want it more. In fact, I've sold lots of products and services, and I've tried to talk people out of certain products and services. The more I try to talk them out, guess what? The more they wanted it, the more they want it. So you need to create that urgency and scarcity. Let me give you some examples. You'll see this in shoe stores, especially for the females, right? You're looking at a pair of shoes, you're not sure if you want it, and they say, you know what, I don't know if we even have that in your size. And they say, well, let me check in the back room. They go to the back room, they come out with a big smile and says, you know what, this is the last one in your size. And you didn't really want it before, but that scarcity causes you to buy the product. You see that with real estate agents too, where they have two or three people that want the house show up at the same time. Home Shopping Network, you'll see that with the countdown clock, creating a time urgency, and as far as the number of product that's still available. In the 1700s, there was a great potato persuasion, they call it. Catherine the Great, Empress of Russia, right? Back then, potatoes were considered poisonous. They were considered cattle food. It's just not fit for human consumption. But she had all these starving people. So what she did, she had her soldiers put in a fence around all the potato fields with big signs that said, do not steal. With that scarcity, the people said, wait a minute, that's not fair. We want our potatoes. We deserve our potatoes. And it solved the problem. Create that scarcity. Limited supply. Sale ends today, whatever it does. I've sold entrepreneurial products, and one thing I did increased my sales 30%. All I had to say was, limit two. They only needed one, right? But limit two created that scarcity where people actually would do that. The next is the law of connectivity. The more your audience feels a bond, connected to, similar to, attracted to you, the more persuasive you become. People need to like you. There needs to be a bond there. If people don't like you, they will not do business with you. If they don't, it's through your marketing, through your writing, whatever it is, there needs to be a connection. And that can be through attraction, your physical appearance, known as the halo effect. We know that attractive people are automatically assigned great traits like kindness, trustworthiness, and intelligence. It's no secret that better-looking students get better grades. It's no secret that better-looking criminals get lighter jail sentences. It's called the halo effect. But this also matters how we dress. Similarity, background, interests, hobbies, people skills, becoming somebody's friend, and of course rapport, that instant connection with somebody, are the four types. So let me give you some examples. Political elections in Canada, they did a lot of study and research, and they found that people were 2.5 times more likely to vote for someone that was better looking. Now, of course, when you ask them after the election, they would never admit that. But that's even true in the elections here in the United States, if you take a look at what's happened in the past. They did a don't walk experiment to see how you were dressed, how that would affect your persuasive abilities, how you would connect with people. They had a man in his jeans and a t-shirt at a crosswalk trying to get people to jaywalk with him, right? He went first, and then a little bit later, a man with a sharp, well-tailored suit. People were 3.5 times more likely to follow the person in the suit than they were the man with the jeans and the t-shirt. Create that connection. In fact, that's true. I did a study at parking lights. When they turned red, people were more likely to honk at a beat-up car than they were a luxury car. Insurance company did a study also and found that people were more likely to buy someone that with the same background, religions, hobbies, traits, were more likely to buy from that person. So you need to find that with your clients, your demographics, what you have in common. And the Carnegie Institute of Technology did a study that found that 85% of your success in life come from your people skills, working with people and understanding people. You need the ability to connect, and you can do that through writing, speaking, and marketing. The next law, another powerful law of obligation. When others do something for us, we feel a strong need, even a push to return the favor. We've all heard the term, you owe me one, right? That obligation, it's part of our psyche, it's part of our being. every culture in the world. We can't live. We have this mental scorecard, and we can't live when people have more points than we have. So returning the favor rids us of the obligation created by the first good deed. And this can be done with a gift, a favor, an invitation, or a compliment. You need to create a gift. It could be a free report, anything that you could offer to create that obligation. Disabled American veterans, they would send out mailers in the mail to people to get donations, and they had about an 18% response. And then they started putting the little stickers. You know the return address stickers you're starting to get in the mail? It almost doubled their response to 35%. Now, the great thing about obligation, it's not one-to-one. That obligation can be 1,000 times more than you actually gave. Those stickers, which cost, what, about 25 cents, now get donations of $20, $50, and even $100. Car dealerships. I study car dealerships because that's an interesting world of persuasion. I was watching a couple. They were sitting there, and they was kind of on a standoff about the car, and the sales rep probably says, look, I'm thirsty. I'm going to go buy a soda. Do you mind if I buy you a soda? Well, sure. They bought him a soda, and this is all subconscious. Subconsciously, he bought him a 50-cent soda, and he had a psychological urge to buy a $20,000 car. That's how it works. Very powerful law. And they did a study with physicians. They had problems with physicians returning surveys because they were very lengthy, and, of course, time for a physician is very important. So what they did is they included a $20 check in the study, and after they did that, 78% of the physicians actually returned the study because of that sense of obligation. Next, the law of verbal packaging. The way you paint the picture. Words affect our perceptions, attitudes, beliefs, and emotions. The words that you use are either going to attract your customers or repel your customers. People will be persuaded based on the words we use and how we present the idea or concept, how you paint the picture. Can your prospect feel your product? Can they see it? Can they taste it? Can they visualize themselves using it? And the research shows that speakers with these verbal skills come across as more credible, competent, and convincing. And let me just do a little test as far as how words create emotions. Take a look at these words and just kind of analyze your feelings. Murder. Hate. Depressed. Cancer. Despair. You can feel the difference. Now let's change the pace. Wealth. Happiness. Inspired. Joy. Success. Can you feel the difference? Words make a critical component. In the airline industry, they're masters of the words they use. They're very careful because they have a whole plane full of people. And if you listen to the introductions and they start talking about everything in the beginning before takeoff, they'll say, in the event of a water landing. Hello? Does anybody not realize what a water landing is? You're crashing. And they have no life preservers on the plane. They're flotation devices. There's no bathrooms. There's lavatories. The plane's never late. It's only delayed. Right? There's no barf bags. It says for motion discomfort. You know the difference between the two? Barf bag for motion discomfort. And they never lose your luggage, do they? It's always misplaced. So watch the words that you use. And sales professionals and persuasion professionals are also very careful because they know that one word can lose the whole deal for them. A sales professional would never say contract. They'd say agreement. They never say sign here. They'd say okay this. They never say I'm a salesperson. They say I'm a consultant. They never say, when someone says, how much does it cost, they'd say the investment is. When they tell them they would ask for a credit card, they'd ask for a form of payment. I think you can feel the difference between the words, and it makes a big difference to really analyze the words that you use. And some big words, and we don't have time to go all of them today, but is a very bad word, okay? But negates everything in front of it. And those of you married know this. You look beautiful tonight, dear but. I love you, but. That's one way to get into the doghouse. So use and instead of but. I mean, if you talk about your product, well, we have the best product in the world. It's going to solve all your needs, but I think you can feel the difference. So be very careful with that word. One word that you do want to use is because that creates a psychological trigger that you're providing a reason. And we need a reason to buy. And even if it's not a valid reason, subconsciously it is in our mind. Elaine Langer did a study at a college university to see the words she used to see how much compliance she could get at a photocopy machine. She came up when there was a line of students and she said, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use the Xerox machine because I'm in a rush? Okay, 94% complied. So she changes around a little bit to see what would happen. She said, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use a Xerox machine? No, because only 60% compliance. So she switched around again. She says, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use a Xerox machine? Because I have to make some copies. Well, duh, right? There's no real reason there. 93% complied because the because was there. Even though it was an invalid reason, it triggered something in someone's mind to be compliant. The next is the law of contrast. We are affected by the differences we see between two things presented in succession. This is important for you to know as infopreneurs. You have to give somebody a comparison about your product, a comparison. If you're offering a product or service and they are going to look for something in their mind, a benchmark to compare it to. Are they going to compare your product against a Hyundai or a Mercedes? If you don't give them that comparison, they will come up with one on their own. And when the second item is quite different from the first, we'll tend to see the object as even more different than it actually is. You need to compare contrast. Let me show you how this works. You need to create a benchmark. You'll see this with suit companies. You go in to buy a suit, they're not going to show you the $100 shoes and the $50 ties first because that would seem too expensive. They're going to sell you a $1,000 suit, and then after $1,000, what's a $100 pair of shoes, what's a $50 tie because of the contrast? You'll see this with car dealerships too. You know, after you spent a $30,000 car, you know, it's undercoating and all these add-ons because it's not that big of a deal. Audio video stores will do this too. You come in and says, I want the $400 TV I saw in the commercial. Okay, do they show you that? No, they will take you to the $10,000 7-speaker HDTV Dolby surround system with the DVD players. It'd be $10,000. And after you see that and feel that, you look at your $400 television, statistically you're going to walk out of there with an $800 television. It works. Also reducing it to the ridiculous. If you were selling a financial package and you said, well, for 31 cents a day, the cost of a cup of coffee, wouldn't it be worth it to you to have that financial security for your family in the future? That's also a form of contrast. And my favorite that we see in the infomercials, but that's not all, that's a form of contrast. Because as you're watching the infomercial, you're getting sucked in, it's late at night, and you're watching it. And by the way, infomercial is a great tool for infopreneurs to watch to learn persuasion techniques. You look at it and it's like, this is a $500 value. Like, well, $500, I don't know if I want to spend $500. But that's, they're setting a benchmark for you, something to compare it to. And then all of a sudden, today, scarcity, it's $199, and then 4 easy payments of $49.95. Like, oh, that's worth it. And then they say, but that's not all. We're going to throw in the chopper and the slicer and the dicer and the Ginsu knives and the Flobee. Whatever it is, they're going to throw it in and give you all these things. And so that's an extra $2,000 value. And so you have this benchmark. So now you're getting $2,500 worth of product for $49.95 for the next 4 months. Compare that contrast. Powerful. Important that you do that. Even if something as simple as crossing out the price and putting it on there. They've done the research at the supermarkets where you notice at the supermarkets and even the retail stores, they leave the prices on there so you can compare and have a benchmark on how much money you are saving. Okay, law of social validation. The greater number of people who find any idea correct, the more the idea will be correct in their mind. People will validate. We are social creatures. If we're not sure what to do in any situation, we look around to see what other people are doing. And our inherent desire for us to belong within a social group and the inclination to change our opinions, our social behavior in ways that are consistent with a social group. Let me give you. They've done research when people are buying gifts for friends. The one thing that most people could do to dramatically increase sale was to say most popular and fastest selling. Why? Because everyone else is using it. And if someone else is using it, it must be right. In fact, a college professor got onto an internet site and artificially cooked the books as far as number one downloads. And they took the worst download, top bottom of the list, number 100, made it number one. It became number one download just because other people were doing it. Testimonials. Gather testimonials for your product. Show people using your product. One of the most powerful things you can do because it shows validation that other people like your product, want your product, and are using your product. We see salting tip jars, right? You're there on a tour bus, and you're sitting there, then all of a sudden you see a tip jar with a couple dollars on there. You're like, oh, I probably should tip. And so you pull out a couple dollars. You see this on piano bars or someone playing the guitar in the street. Social validation. And, of course, video stores. They've done a lot of research on video stores, and the most profitable item for a video store is the older videos. But they did a lot of research. When people come in the store, the first place many of them would go would be to the return counter, the return bin, to see what other people were renting. And so what they started to do is they took other videos, the older videos, and started putting them into the return rack, and their profit increased dramatically because of that validation, that social proof. The next is the law of expectations. Expectations influence reality. Whether it be a salesperson wiping their feet on the mat, expecting to get in, whether you expect people to run up and order your product, to buy your product, expectations are very powerful. We even know teachers have a lot of power in our society. When they label a child ADD or stupid or bright or helper or class clown, that could fall on their whole life. And so we find out that individuals tend to make decisions based on how others expect them to perform. And people tend to fulfill expectations, whether positive or negative. The research at Harvard University, this professor came out and said, look, I've breeded a special smart rat that goes through mazes very, very fast. And so half the students he gave the smart rat, and half the students he gave the average rat, when in reality they were all from the same batch. But that expectation on the students that these rats were faster, something that simple, their times came back dramatically faster than the other rats, just on that expectation. We all know about placebos, a small sugar pill that pharmaceutical companies use in studies. They see people as high as 60% of the people that use placebos see benefits because mentally they expect that to happen. Even during World War II, when they ran out of morphine, they'd use placebos and most of the soldiers would have a reduction in pain. That includes our environments. What does your environment expect? If you've ever gone to a timeshare presentation, when you go into that room, the music, the excitement, it's conducive for persuasion. And of course, embedded commands. We don't have a lot of time to go into that today. But embedded commands, that is a short 2 to 3 word command embedded within a sentence that bypasses your conscious mind right into your subconscious mind. Next law, law of association. Association with symbols, gestures, experts, and celebrities can trigger how we feel about people, things, ideas, or events. People will look for association with your products. What are they associating your product or your service? This could be endorsements from a celebrity. Could be a symbol. We've done research with credit card symbols. Even that symbol alone will increase the amount of people that will purchase your product and the amount they will spend. Smells and music. Let me give you some examples. Tiger Woods. We all know Tiger Woods. Why would Nike spend millions and millions of dollars a year to pay Tiger Woods? It's because of that association. We like Tiger. He's a phenomenal golfer. He's a neat guy. And if they see that Nike symbol on his hat, all those things that we associate with Tiger Woods automatically go to the Nike product. Michael Jordan, Bill Crosby, it's worth every penny. Billions of dollars a year are spent with that type of association. And that's a question you have to ask yourself, or what are people associating your product in their minds? American flag, you see that happening quite a bit. Buy American, be proud to be American, because of those feelings we have towards our country and towards the flag also goes towards our product. The Olympics, being a sponsor, same scenario. You see U.S. presidents, when they buy a pet, they don't buy a hamster. They don't buy a snake. They get a good old American dog because of the associations that it has. And of course, real estate agents know the power of smell and the association with smell. They'll have somebody cook bread or bake cookies before somebody comes by to visit the house because that will trigger emotions from their childhood, hopefully good emotions. And that's what it does. And they do research with in the malls with the cinnamon roll companies that they make sure about 25 or 50 feet out that you start smelling it because that triggers. I mean, if you smell fresh cut grass or pool chlorine, it'll automatically associate something many times that happened many, many years ago. Next law, law of involvement. Involve your prospect's senses, grab their attention, and create action. Your greatest enemy to get your call to action as master persuaders is indifference. Indifference will kill you. So you need to create participation, create action, and have them participate in the process and take ownership of the problem and create the right atmosphere for persuasion, getting them involved. Show you how to do that. Psychologist Kurt Lewin did a study during World War II. During that time, they were trying to get more households to eat more intestinal meat. You can tell by your faces that's something that we probably would have a hard time today too, but that's what they wanted to do. And so they brought in one group of housewives to convince them, to persuade them to use intestinal meats. So they brought them in and they had testimonials and they had recipes and they all tried it. They had a big rah-rah session. They were all excited. And then they went back later to see how many people actually used intestinal meats, 3%. Then they did a different thing. They brought them in, they sat them down on a table and said, look, we need the houses in America to eat more intestinal meats. How should we solve it? What should we do? Just that simple. They started talking about it. They persuaded themselves. Something as simple as, What would you like me to do? How would you solve this? They persuade themselves. 33% of those ladies started using intestinal meats. I mean, think about it. What if you charge $50 for a test drive? You have to get people involved with your products, get them mentally thinking about it. Pet stores, they're famous for this. You walk in, you're the dad, you're like, no, I shouldn't be here, and your kids are just excited and they're happy. And the pet store owner sees you and says, and they shoot this dog, and say, no way am I having a dog. The store owner puts his arm around you and says, look, just take it home for the weekend. If you don't like it, bring it back. Does that dog ever come back? That dog never comes back. Getting people involved, and that's part of the guarantee. You need to have an irresistible guarantee that it's a no-brainer for people to take that product into their house. Because once you get that in their possession, in their hands, statistically speaking, you're not going to get it back. So have an irresistible guarantee, get it in their product, get the product in their hands, get them involved. And use stories, whether you're speaking, you're marketing, or you're writing. Stories bypass our logical mind. People automatically listen to you, and they love stories, and they can hit the point home, so use plenty of stories. The next is the law of esteem. Acceptance, recognition, and praise is one of our deepest cravings. Even simple as flirting increases your ability to persuade. Because we're starting. Now, esteem is how much you like yourself. And if you can help someone like themselves more, your ability to persuade increases tenfold. And that could be compliments, praise, and recognition. They also affect our esteem. Let me show you how that works. There have been a lot of studies on esteem. They found that 80% of third graders have high self-esteem. So by the time they get to high school, only 5% of them do. I don't have time to go into psychology, what's happening here, but self-esteem's at an all-time low, and we're craving to feel better about ourselves, a compliment, anything, to feel part of the team. We want it more than anything. And they've done a lot of studies on just plain ingratiation, which is flattery, or as the real world calls it, brown-nosing, or sucking up. But they interviewed supervisors that had employees that were always there, sucking up, brown-nosing, and they rated those employees as more competent, more motivated, and more qualified for leadership position. Now, you want to keep your ingratiation sincere and genuine, but the research shows even when we know it's fake and insincere, we still like it. It still works. And so you need to put that into your marketing. Napoleon changed the war effort when he realized that men would die for a blue ribbon. Men would sacrifice their lives for little praise, recognition, and honor. And at Hollins College, there was an interesting study where they had the male students go around and compliment the female students on wearing blue, which the next couple weeks dramatically increased the female students wearing blue. Then they changed it to red, and it actually doubled the amount of students wearing red on campus. Law of balance. The last law, persuasive messages need to appeal to both the emotional and logical side of the brain, the twin engines of persuasion. You need to have balance. You need to have both. And as master persuaders, you need to realize when you create a call to action, what is your audience? Who are the demographics? Are they more emotional or are they more logical? Now, again, you always have to have both. Obviously, a group of engineers, you're going to have a lot more logic than emotion, but always make sure that you do have both. And find that balance. And, of course, logic is long-term and emotional is short-term. Now, for the logical side, the best type of research to use is statistics, examples, and expert testimony. And the evidence on research shows when you say evidence is a fact, it dramatically increases your persuasibility. And if you're starting off with low credibility, if they don't know who you are, if you're sending them a direct mail piece, you need use a lot more logic. If they know who you are and what you represent, you can use a lot more emotion. So emotions add strength, energy, and validity to your message. You want to use plenty of emotion, but you just need to keep that balance and find that balance with your target audience. And pride, fear, worry, and pity are some great emotions that create triggers, that create a call to action. Now, when you look at the 12 laws of persuasion, the foundation for all those, of course, is trust. Getting that call to action is going to come from trust. Do people believe you? Do they trust you? I want to talk about the 5 C's of trust, which is the foundation of everything we do. Bottom line, we already know if people don't trust you, they're not going to do business with you. And so where does trust come from? Let me give you those 5 C's. The first is character, that integrity, that honesty. That's what most people think about, trust. The second is competence, your knowledge and your ability. Now let me just paint this picture with an example. Let's say you move into a new town and you want to go see a dentist and you don't know who to see. So you talk to your neighbor, he says, I need to know a dentist. Can you recommend a dentist? And he says, sure, I know a dentist. great character, belongs to my church group, I've known him my whole life, but he's not very competent. Last time I was there, he stuck a needle through my cheek and put the filling in the wrong tooth, okay? Would you go to that dentist? No, right? Okay, no, I know another dentist. Very competent, graduated top of his class. He's the best in the city, there's no doubt about it. Just doesn't have much character. He tends to overbill and tends to put in more fillings than he needs to. Would you go to that dentist? Absolutely not. The third is confidence, conviction, and belief. If you're sitting in that dentist office and he comes in with a furrowed brow and he puts the x-ray in and he says, you know, I think you need a root canal. I'm not sure. What do you think? Okay, red flag. Okay, there's not going to be a lot of trust. Okay? Next is credibility, history, and experience. That would be the diplomas on the wall and, of course, your experience with that dentist. And that's how you get it to work. What is the history? So you're sitting in the chair. He says, you know, 6 months from now, we're going to have to do a root canal on that tooth. Okay, I can wait 6 months. So you come back 6 months later and he asks the dentist, what about that root canal? He says, what root canal? You don't need a root canal. Who told you you needed a root canal? Okay, credibility is shot. Not going to happen. And the fifth C is congruence, that consistency and that harmony. If he's talking about the root canals that you need, he's kind of smirking and making faces and his facial features aren't congruent with what he's actually telling you, you will also lose the trust that you have. And so you need to have the five C's of trust in your message, in your persuasion, and in your writing. So some keys to create your call of action. You need to create these tools and look at these laws and make them part of you, understand them, and use them. And some of the ones that you want to take a look at, use multiple laws. Use as many laws as you can. Understand your audience. Again, these laws work, but you have to understand your audience and how to use them in the right way. Spend a lot of time talking about the actual science and the art. Takes additional time to develop. Contrast, dissonance, and scarcity are probably the top three laws that you want to include in everything that you do. Develop unshakable trust. Okay, people will trust you. That's a great thing about this industry. When people like your products and love what you do, when you have that trust, when you send and tell them, and you call them and you tell them you have a new product, doesn't matter how much it costs, what it is, they're going to buy it. And those are the type of customers that you want, that you can get long term. Create irresistible offers with guarantees that get people involved. Understand how long-term influence works and identify and solve their problems. Critical to create that call to action. Get people to act. Again, it's natural human behavior for them not to make a decision. And we know as marketers, the longer somebody waits, we know they're not going to make a decision. And so you need to get them a decision. That's why the call to action is so. They might think it's great, exciting, I'm going to think about it, but they're not going to think about it. And that's why persuasion is so important. And to be an ethical persuader, you're helping somebody get involved with something that they need. Because if they don't get involved with you, they probably might not get involved, they might solve their problems, or someone else with an inferior product might persuade them to do it. So let's talk about motivation. Because motivation is that call to action, because when you write your copy and you do your persuasion, you have to understand that different people are motivated by different things. I call this the motivation equation. Basically, the thing to remember is that there's basically two motivators in life, inspiration and desperation. That's it. So in your marketing, you need to use a little both and understand that some people move away from their problems and some people move towards the solution. Some people away from their pain towards the pleasure, however you want to categorize it, but it's basically inspiration and desperation. You need to have a little bit of both in your marketing because we're different people. You need to understand your audience. Now, that type of inspiration could be either internal or external. Now, remember, desperation is rooted out of logic, and inspiration is rooted out of your emotions. Okay? So let me just briefly show you how this works. There's basically four quadrants of motivation. You want to use all four in your marketing. The bottom left-hand corner is external desperation. That would be fear. Let's say you're doing a weight loss product. You could use fear. If you don't get on this, you're going to die. Simple. You're going to scare people. You're going to get people on your product. You're going to die of a heart attack. You're going to live a miserable life. Get on my product. Very short term, but for many people it works. The next is internal desperation, or that duty or obligation. For a weight loss product, your duty or obligation to your family. You know, your family wants you to be healthy. Your family wants to be around for a long time. That would be the internal desperation you feel to lose weight and to get on that product. The next, the lower right-hand corner, external inspiration. That respect or your love, where instead of that feeling that desperation, you're inspired to get lean and mean for your wife, to look good, and just to to feel better because you're doing that for other people, to live longer for your children, to be able to see your children get married. That would be internal, external inspiration. And the top, the most important, the greatest motivators, internal inspiration, when you can help other people feel that it's their idea and they want to do it and tap into their passion for a weight loss product to feel better, to look better, to last longer, to be able to create a fortune and to share with everyone because I am healthy, that would be passion, that internal inspiration, that internal desire, and if you can tap into that. Now, as marketers and infopreneurs, understand that you want to use a little of all four in your marketing, but the most powerful, of course, is using inspiration. And that's the critical aspect with persuasion. There's 12 laws, and we can spend a lot of time on these laws, but I want you to take a look at your marketing, and after you write your marketing piece, look at the different laws that you need to use, that you need to incorporate, and how to use those, because it'll make a big difference in your life. Persuasion will change your whole life. The whole world is persuasion. Everything that we do, well, again, as parents or managers or employees, learn how to persuade, learn how to influence. It'll change everything that you do. Again, because less than 1% of the people in this world even know these skills. They don't take the time. They know the three or four notes, right, on the piano, and they just hit them with every person, with every audience, with every demographic. They hit them with the same three or four, and there's over 100. So it's up to you to study your audience, know which ones to use and how to use them, and that's what makes a big difference in persuasion and influence, motivation, and power. Now, for additional information, you can go to www.magneticpersuasion.com for complete information on mastering persuasion, motivation, and influence. We do send out a weekly persuasion tip newsletter, and the reason we do that, it's small, manageable, bite-sized pieces. If you can just implement one a week, you'll see a big difference in your future. We do offer affiliate programs, resource materials, and valuable links. But what I want you to do is take a look at your marketing, take a look at your information, infopreneuring, and do the call to action first. Do it first because that is the most important. It doesn't matter how well you speak or how well you write, if you can't get people to run to the back of the room to buy your product, if you can't get people to call your 800 number to buy your product, you're not going to get anywhere. So you have to create that urgency. You have to find those laws of persuasion to be able to do that. And that's my gift to you. Again, I spent thousands of hours studying this and trying to crystallize it. There's a lot more information that we can talk about, but persuasion is the key. And use it honestly and ethically. Sure, it has a little bad name for some people with anything. There's a kind of internet can be used for good, it can be used for evil. Persuasion is the same. I mean, they use the same thing as President of the United States in peace negotiations, whatever it is. Persuasion is a powerful tool that you can master, and when you master it, it'll make a big difference in your life, your success, and your income. Thank you.